Make sure you get us loud and clear.
Welcome to Used Wigs Radio.
This is the radio station with nothing but...
Lonely. Download some friends.
Hi, this is Greg Fitzsimmons, and you're listening to Used Wigs Radio. So, give yourself a round of applause for, you know, really probably having done everything else you could have done.
Perfect.
Hello, everybody. Welcome to Used Wigs Radio, podcast number 61. Tonight, we have four of the cute kids from John and Kate Plus 8, 14 of the 18 Duggar children, and three of the littlest people from Roll Off Farms on our reality family extravaganza podcast tonight. You guys excited?
Who's the Duggar family?
You don't know who the Duggar family is?
No.
You know, we're going to get back to this. Actually,
the 14 and counting or something?
Yeah, 18 and counting.
18 and counting?
Actually, I lied, guys. We don't have any of those super little kids on the show tonight. We have our Used Wigs Radio comedy extravaganza with grown-ups. We have a very special guest tonight, Dave Walk.
Hey, oh, that's so cute. Hello.
Hello.
I don't know. Hi.
I was going to build you up a little bit more, Dave.
Oh,
so
I don't know.
No, it's
you
fine.
Paused?
You can jump in. No, jump in whenever you
live
like.
In the studio. Very special.
Live in the studio. Dave.
Just as cute as those little kids, I think.
He is.
No?
Cherubic, I'd say. Dave is a comedian and the mastermind behind Comic Verse Audience website, Versus Audience website, the one-stop shop for Philadelphia comedy and stand-up news and information. Is that correct, Dave?
Yeah, I'd like to think so.
Like to think so?
Yeah. Yes, yeah. I'm going to go with yes.
Yes.
Are there competing comedy websites on podcast?
Yeah, there's a few, but I'd like to think I'm the best.
Yeah.
I don't know. There's a few other ones, you know.
They're getting some pretty heavy.
You don't have a monopoly on it right yet.
No. Working on it.
Yeah.
Yeah, it gets brutal. It gets deadly.
They get some flame wars in the comment sections to each other.
Uh-huh. It gets, yeah.
You have your comedians. They have theirs.
Yeah, it's split on
site. Do you have a stable of comedians that are like your crew and they don't?
No.
No.
No, I mean, anybody will do any show, you know, which is good.
Comedians are horse, right?
You'll do any podcast.
That seems to be the case. Like, when we reach out to try to interview people, it's a lot easier to get a comedian.
Yeah, it's you don't want to turn anything down. Just who knows what's going to happen, you know, from something.
And most comedians have a lot of free time during the day, correct?
Yes. Yeah. Yeah, like the old cliche is, you know, they sleep in late. Then they watch TV all day, and then that night they get on stage and say, I saw this commercial.
Yeah, pretty much.
This commercial's crazy. I was watching Fox News and going like that. But, yeah, I mean, if you're a working comedian, you stay up really late.
That's true.
Sleep in until past noon, and then just do it again, pretty much.
So. And you are a stand-up comedian as well?
No. Well, I am. Hey. Okay, yeah, I am. Yeah, I thought you said working comedian. I do it, yeah, here and there.
In what capacity? Are you like the MC for local clubs, or do you travel? Do you go on the road?
Well, Dave puts on a show with Comic Versus.
Yeah, I put on a show. I host that. I book that and everything. Basically just doing other shows around town.
And you do it at the Shubin Theater?
Yes.
That's a very cool place.
Yeah, it's a nice little tiny theater.
Right off South Street. I saw Dave Hill, the Dave Hill Explosion there.
That guy's
great.
And
it's a really, really nice little theater. And you guys, what do you do? Show like once a month or so?
Yep, the first Monday of every month. Next one is May 4th. Got some funny guys for it.
What do you got, like three or four comedians?
Yeah, it's four guys usually.
Always males?
What's that?
Always males?
No.
I branch out, okay. You know. Yeah.
I try
to get a varied show.
Now, you know, I notice, and I wanted to ask you about this, which is, I find very funny. You know, comedians have a lot of free time, and now that they discovered, like, Twitter, like, I think the majority of comedians are, like, used to be fearful of their websites. They have someone do their MySpace, but they'd have someone handle their websites. But now when a new comedian comes on Twitter, it's like, you know, a kid on Easter with just candy.
Who are some that you follow that you would recommend?
I stopped following the ones like Doug Benson.
Doug
I had to
Benson's
stop following. Doug Benson is hilarious.
He calmed down.
Did he?
Why? Yeah. He was tweeting too much?
He was doing great material all day long. Like
material, yeah.
He was. I had it like open for 2 hours, and he had about 20 tweets, and it was all A-list stuff, really funny. And I felt like
his best stuff.
I felt like Twittering back, like, dude, this is probably your show tonight. You know, why waste it here? But a lot of people. Oh,
I just started following Rob Corddry.
Okay,
and he'll give you two or three a day, and yeah, they're tight and very funny.
But are they contained in one tweet, or,
yeah,
or was
yeah
he doing two or three in a
no
row? They had to go together.
I don't think that's cheating. Is to like string yeah them all together like that?
Well, that's why I ask.
Right,
well,
yeah, I do that a little bit.
I yeah do it a little bit.
Yeah, you can continue it.
You can if, but the I like to. I'm in the middle of doing a thing for Use Wigs where I'm classifying different types of Twitterers, and I call it like snipers are like Todd Barry, who tweets once a week, but when he does, it's funny, or it's the most mundane piece of nonsense, like, really need throw pillows, thinking about Bed Bath or Beyond or Target.
Yeah,
hit me up. You know,
totally
like something
Todd
like
Barry
that.
Yeah, yeah.
You know, and it's funny. But Paul F. Tompkins for a while, he got on there and he was just, you know,
yeah,
it's funny. But you know, I think everybody, they go a little crazy, then they're like, whoa, gotta, you know, pretend like I don't have, pretend I have something to do besides, you know, Twittering and stuff.
Yeah,
like
I was checking it too much. I had the little Twitter Fox thing. So
yeah,
anytime it always popped up as I'm on, you know,
oh,
work or something.
Yeah,
it's
yeah
like, I gotta turn this off. Like, I'm not getting anything done.
There's a show on Current TV called Infomania. I think I've talked about it before. It's very funny, and there's some comedians on there. Mm-hmm. One guy, Ben Hoffman, all he does is retweet annoying celebrities' tweets. So he'll just retweet, like, Hannah Montana, something really stupid she said about, like, you know, Jesus doesn't like liars. But he won't set it up. He'll just be like, retweet Hannah Montana. And, like, Dave Hill does it. He'll just retweet, like, the girl from The Cosby Show who has a show, like Raven Simone. He'll just retweet something she said. And you read it, and you're like, oh, wow, Dave's into this? This seems a little silly. Oh, wait, I get it. You know, like that. So,
yeah, I like to try to get the word out. Like, Shaq, I don't know if you follow Shaq. Who doesn't follow Shaq? He's the best.
Right.
But he put something on where he's like, Mark Cuban, get in touch with me. Mark Cuban's the owner of the Dallas Mavericks.
Right.
He's like, I think you can get in touch with him. And I, like, retweet that, like, just getting the word out in case Mark Cuban needs to, you know, read it. Just someone passes on to Mark Cuban. And turns out Shaq wants to play for him next year.
Oh, really?
Yeah. So that's why he's putting it out
there.
He
gets him on the download, did he?
It's crazy.
Well, I give you two credit for knowing who Mark Cuban is. That's pretty good.
He's the only owner
that you would
that,
yeah,
you, that you know, right?
We're not real sports
he's a,
guys.
He's a dork. He's a giant. He's a. No,
I,
mean,
I like
is
him.
It, oh,
he's
you
got
like
a blog.
Him?
Yeah.
I think.
I can't take it.
No. I like him. Yeah. I mean, I just think he's, you know, he's.
No, it's all about him. He's. I mean, he owns a team, and it's about the team, and it's. He's putting on a show in the stand.
Yeah.
We're gonna play a song. Before we go into song, moment of silence for Harry the Cat.
Oh yeah.
All right.
The 0-2 pitch, swing and a miss, struck him out. The Philadelphia Phillies are 2008 World Champions of Baseball.
Todd, we're going to play a song by a band that you thought I would like.
Yeah.
And I actually did.
I brought this for you. It's my gift.
Thank you.
I got it from the record label with no vowels, recordlabel.com.
Yes.
And it's Just Desserts by Art Poop.
I went to the doctor. I'm not going back. He said
was Just Desserts by Art Brut.
The amazing thing about Art Brut types, we never talked about them.
What does Art Brut mean?
Dave!
Nobody knows. Nobody knows. That's the
I would
thing.
Just say someone who doesn't know much about art who's or just ham-fisted when it comes to art. Kind of brutish.
So that's off their album, Art Brut vs. Satan.
Hey, you know what? We did not tease our big interview. This is our comedy spectacular.
Yeah,
that's right.
We're talking about Philly comedy. We have Dave here talking about comedy. And Todd, you interviewed
Greg Fitzsimmons.
Who is
Greg Fitzsimmons.
Very top-level comic, known worldwide from his appearances on all the VH1 shows doing funny commentary.
He's absolutely talking. He's kind of a standby talking head for the best week ever. And I love the 70s, 80s. And
he's part of Howard Stern's coterie of
I suppose,
correct?
He is.
Yeah, so we're going to play him in a little bit, but I just wanted to tease that. So if you're thinking of leaving this podcast right now, don't, because...
Don't dare.
Well, we're drinking, too, we have to, of course, mention. I know it sounds like we're talking about Dogfish Head a lot, and we do, because we love them, but we're drinking their Indian Brown Ale, which is fantastic. And as much as I love these guys, I have to... A little complaint, Russ. What would you think it is?
You don't like the design of the labels?
I don't. They really need help.
I'm sorry. Thanks, Todd.
I don't... Todd, what do you think?
I'm just going to...
Dave, can
out.
You read this? Readability? No, you can't see.
No.
Dave
is
actually sitting
brown.
On my left leg. We're very close. And he can't read what this says. And I think these guys need a very good graphic designer, maybe. Maybe a website usability company could come help them out. Use your experience.
I know one.
There you go.
Do you know, I like the fact that they have a big... predominant paragraph describing the beer, right?
Yes.
That's cool. You just don't like the fact that there's like zero contrast between the writing and the background.
You can't...
But you're okay with the fact that they have the explanation of the beer.
Sure. I just think you would need some way to pop out that text to really kind of, you know, hit you a little bit. I don't have the best eyes, so... Guys, I want to talk about certain things about comedy. Like, we all grew up, I'd say we're all pretty much fans of comedy. A lot of our humor, our personalities are shaped by comedians when we were young. And I'm old, of course, but you guys are young kids. But the comedy album, do you remember growing up?
Like Bill Cosby.
Yes. Like, do you remember having a comedy album? Were you too young?
Yeah.
A comedy CD, maybe.
How old are you, Dave? Do you mind me asking?
I'm 26.
26, wow.
He's got his whole life ahead of him.
Yeah, it's just begun. I don't know.
That's a nice beard for 26.
Yeah, thank you. That's like a 28-year-old beard.
He's growing a beard at a 28-year-old level.
No, my parents didn't really bust out albums much. I guess they just kept them in the basement.
But would you say, was there like a CD or a cassette when you were young?
Like Crank Yankers, even when you were little, was Crank Yankers?
Crank Yankers. A little older than that.
Or the Jerk Boys?
Like, right. So let's do a little timeline.
I start with Whitest Kids You Know. That's the first group I know. No. I don't know. I can't think of it. I mean, I guess Cosby.
Was Eddie Murphy Raw? Was that too...
No, that wouldn't be it. I don't know. I always try to think about like early stuff.
This will give us all like a touchstone. I'm looking for where I'm old enough that
you know, crank Victrola.
I would just crank up the Victrola. No, actually, it was Steve Martin's "Let's Get Small and Wild and Crazy Guy" albums. I mean, when we got them and sat in a room and I just listened over and over, I was like, "This is the greatest thing in the world, and this is the funniest thing," and I can't believe I'm stopping playing Who and Yes records to listen to this comedian. And then when he would say a curse every now and then, my dad would walk in and be like, did he just say rubber? Did he just say prophylactic? Did he just say... And then my dad would hang out and listen with us, which is pretty cool.
Did you listen to it, Russ? Did you listen to albums?
I had all of the Monty Python tapes.
There you go.
And I like wore those out. But I also had George Carlin Gold, which was like a double set of... It was like a compilation of all of his early albums, and I freaking loved that.
Like the difference between baseball and football and stuff, and, right?
No, it was before that.
Oh, okay.
It was really like his comedy from the 60s. That's kind of how I started getting into understanding references from before my time by listening to stuff like that.
Yeah, there you go. Todd, you?
My neighbor and very good friend had a couple Cosby albums. I know it's kind of the quintessential.
Yeah.
And we really... And the race car, Soapbox Derby, and the Chicken Heart, you know, like... Those are ones that are often referenced, and luckily I listened to them through a friend's record player and enjoyed them.
Yeah, and they were like...
Are you guys Cosby fans today?
Yes, I still like him.
I saw him a few weeks ago.
Yeah,
wow. In Atlantic City.
Funny or
oh,
preachy?
Oh, he's great. No,
really?
Not preachy at all. I mean, he started with like an Adam and Eve thing, okay, or,
yeah, yeah,
or
yeah,
the Bible. But, oh, it's funny. It was,
what?
It's so he, silly and...
What, he got religious?
No. Oh. No, I mean, he would always do, you know, like, oh, the Bible must have been like, you know, type stuff. I don't know. If oh. I
guess, he molesty?
No, no, he was not. He kept that, so yeah.
Was he molesty?
He's great. He did this whole thing about, he started out by, he's like, he's cooking turkey dinner, you know, on Thanksgiving or whatever. He's talking about that and that, all these jokes for that. And then he goes, okay, people, when you're making the turkey, where did you ever see the turkey bacon? And he goes on like this 5-minute thing, what is turkey bacon? It's the most absurd, silly thing you could talk about.
So he's not so, like, I know what you were saying. I was afraid he'd get so old and curmudgeon.
No,
he would
not
forget
at all.
The beauty of his early silliness.
It just seems that every time he's
so
on
great.
TV now, he's hollering yeah. at people about something, you know? And rightly, yeah. I mean, there are plenty of people that need to get hollered.
Right.
I have no problem with hollering.
No, he knows to entertain, you know?
Yeah,
he knows
yeah.
how to still be a comic. He does a lot of, like, you know, wife stuff.
Years
know.
Ago, he had his own television show on Thursday nights.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
Never heard
it
of it.
It was hysterical.
Which
bunch
of
your
kids?
The whole family.
I know, Dave, this is before way before your time.
No, but I would watch that. I would watch I loved Cosby Show, Fresh Prince. That was me right there. Fresh
All right,
Prince.
Good. So now we
two
know.
Comments yeah, would be helps. One. I love that you use the word hollering. That my great grandmother used to say that to us seriously.
Hollering,
like stop all that hollering.
Hollering.
So I like that. Oh, also, did you hear that MC Hammer is going to have a what is it? A reality show about his life? And people were asking, well, what's that going to be? It's basically the camera's going to follow him around. He said it's going to be exactly like the Cosby Show, but unscripted. That's what he said. So I'm looking forward to that.
I wonder if it'll be better than his Saturday morning cartoon called Hammerman. You remember that
one?
He had his own cartoon, Hammerman.
Oh, good lord.
Maybe I can dig up the theme song for that.
Hammerman! Hammer! Hammerman! Hammer! Whenever there's a crime, some crooks are gonna do time. They all better beware, cause the Hammerman will be there.
Excellent. All right, let's play a song. And this is an important one because it's one of my songs. You know what I mean? Like, in the importance of songs. Like, Todd, it was cute. You had a song. Blah, blah, blah. But this is
the
one of
the song that I got for you,
Jeff. Yeah, it was. That was something special for Jeff I was
Probably.
Thinking of. This is a song by one of my favorite bands of all time who came out with a new EP, Superchunk, one of the greatest bands of the 90s. This is Misfits and Mistakes from their new EP, Leaves in the Gutter. Listen to it and love it.
All these open spaces, well, they're killing us.
And we're back, people. That was Misfits and Mistakes, a new EP by Superchunk called Leaves in the Gutter. And this is just a bunch of, I think, five or six songs that they've been playing. They haven't had anything new since 2002, but they are working on a new album, and they are fantastic. And there's also a very good DVD out about it, a little tour documentary. Superchunk came out in 2004. Look that up on Netflix. Not sure of the name, but I just put in Superchunk with your hands going like this, and you'll figure that out. Guys, I want to ask you, a lot of stand-up comedians get TV shows, correct? Like, that's caught a lot of, you know, we've asked people that, like Mike Birbiglia and stuff like that. Like
sitcoms, yeah. Sitcom. And game shows.
And game shows, mm-hmm. right. So that to me seems like, you know, the nirvana for a stand-up comedian. It's like you work hard enough, then you get that sitcom and everything's gold, because it used to be like Tim Allen got it. It started with Cosby and then all these other kind of hacks, like, you know, and then Jeff Foxworthy got it. So everybody was getting their sitcom. And they were successful in different levels of success. But how many people who started in stand-up made it to the big screen and were actually viable stars and still are? Like, who do you think? Can you name some? I just compiled a small list, and I probably forgot a couple. But who do you think was the greatest who went from stand-up?
Eddie Murphy
was probably...
Steve Martin.
Yeah, but both of those guys now, I don't care what they do. Right.
Yeah.
Right.
So, yeah.
Well, that was part two of my question. You hit that like apogee, and then all of a sudden you're like,
yeah, like Nader. I don't care about them at all. I think the only people that probably have continued were people that started in stand up, then went into comedy movies, then became dramatic actors. That's
the death knell of the stand up comedian who started in silly comedy movies, and then everyone gets to a point, they're like, and it's not a bad thing, you get older, you kind of think about your life, and you want to be like, you know what, I'm more than just, you know, the jerk Steve Martin. I'm the Picasso meets Einstein Steve Martin, you know? And so you start thinking, I have to make movies that are different than the silly movies. So, you know, like when certain comedians made...
But he wrote that he was a star, he made that.
What?
You made reference to the show that he wrote. But.
Yeah, no, I'm just saying Steve Martin trying to be all uppity, and we know you're smart and stuff, but comedians who once, like when they take themselves a little bit too serious, that's when they start going on the downturn.
Well, yes and no, right? Did Tom Hanks start as a comedian? He didn't?
Not a stand-up, no.
He was never a stand-up. But
he was just in Punchline.
But Robin Williams was.
That's right, he played a stand-up in Punchline.
But Robin Williams was.
Yes, right? Robin Williams. On my list, Russ! On my list!
Well... I think he's had some good dramatic roles. I don't care so much about what he's doing now.
But even now, like
1 Hour Photo and stuff. Like he has some movies that are decent.
I like Robin Williams' dramatic roles better than his stupid Patch
he's
Adams.
He's a better actor than he is comedian. If you
Yeah. Excellent point, Todd.
Mm-hmm.
Let's go to my big list again. I'm looking at a big list. The two, probably Jim Carrey. Started out as a very popular stand-up. Mm. He got his break, Rodney Dangerfield's Young Comedian Specials, they used to have on HBO. Todd, I mean, Russ, are you taking a sip of Todd's beer?
I know.
This is actually pretty rough.
Yeah, don't feel obligated.
Dave, you might want to try one.
I gotta try it.
Yeah. All right, there we go, Dave. There's a glass for you. Right now, I'm sorry, in the middle of our comedy talk.
The other one was passable. I think the first batch was passable. This doesn't taste right.
Well, that's also coming after. I'm sitting here drinking a Talisker, a fantastic scotch, and then to drink that afterwards.
I don't mind it. You know what? I don't mind it.
It's not great.
It's not good, but I don't mind it. I've had worse. all right, so...
But you just already said tonight you can't see. You've said in the past you can't smell.
No, my sense of taste is
crap. And now, your sense of taste is
No, I have great eyesight. It's the only thing I have going for me.
But this tastes like sour cabbage or something.
Ooh. Mm-hmm.
Maybe. Beer kraut.
Okay. Beer kraut.
Sour patch beer.
How about just Braukraut? Frau Kraut.
This, I will say that I think this is probably my last batch of.
No, Todd, we have so many great names we can give your shitty beer.
It's a lot like cooking, you know, and then you have to wait a month before you have it, and I live within walking distance to a distributor.
Yeah.
And I'm pretty much rich.
You know? Aren't you filthy rich, Todd?
Pretty close, so it just doesn't make sense. It doesn't add up.
All right, so you're going to run through the rest of the
list.
Let me
just give you a couple more, and then the trajectory is pretty much the same for everybody. And the other one
It's always stand-up. You're saying stand-up, TV star, and then movie star.
No. Not necessarily TV star, even though everybody on here went TV before, except Freddie Murphy. Saturday Night Live.
Freddie Murphy.
Freddie Murphy.
We call him...
I didn't say Freddie Murphy.
Hey,
Freddie Murphy.
I know that guy.
That's Eddie's other unfunny brother who's trying to break in there.
No, but I actually think that anybody who went from stand-up to TV first probably had a better career because there's so much more exposure in TV for people.
Yeah, yeah. Okay, Adam Sandler, he was a great stand-up. Really, really funny stand-up. Mm-hmm. And then, he made silly movie. And then now he's going to get close because his new movie's coming out. Have you heard about his new movie?
No.
It's called Funny People.
Okay, that one, yeah.
Which is about, he's a stand-up comedian, but it's not a comedy. It's about, he finds out he's dying, and he befriends these other stand-up comedians, and it's kind of one of those, you know.
Seth Rogen.
Yeah, Seth Rogen's
again,
in it.
Again?
But yeah, Seth Rogen,
are you a fan of him at this point?
Seth Rogen?
No, not Seth Rogen. Adam Sandler.
I've never been I was a fan of his stand-up, never got any of his movies, never understood him.
Saturday Night Live? What about Saturday Night Live?
Saturday Night Live he was good on.
Remember he used to be on Remote Control?
He was
like the crazy
Stud Boy.
Yeah, yeah.
Stud Boy.
And I thought that Punch Drunk Love was a phenomenal movie, but besides that, I can't remember just even a moment that
I was
enjoying
watching. Yeah, you're talking comedians that are doing good movies, because there aren't many.
It's true.
You know what I mean? Like Chris Rock does movies, but nothing.
There you go.
Like he knows he's not that good at it, I think. And he doesn't want to turn the prior where he's just doing, you know, the biggest thing.
I think he's finally realized that he can't write and direct and do the movies. He's a good, maybe not even a good, like, supporting guy in a movie because he's not a great actor. He's Chris Rock, and you're not going to really think of him.
And that's the problem. They're so strong at what they are, you know. They've got their own character that is them, that it's hard for them to do something else, I guess, you know.
Well, let me, before we really get to the Greg Fitzsimmons interview, I just want to say these guys I've mentioned obviously have all had success and were kind of, you know, in different levels of doing bad movies, but I kind of enjoy when, like, right now they'll give anyone movies based on, so like when Dane Cook got his, you know, he's the greatest stand-up in the world, everybody, let's give him movies. They gave him 4 movies. Everyone bombed. So that's kind of refreshing to know, to me, that, you know.
You're not a fan of his stand-up either, though.
No, I don't think most people are.
What's that?
Yeah.
That's the one guy that
Jeff Dunham.
Oh, my God.
He's huge.
You cannot beat
him.
He's
like the biggest comedian right now. It's unwatchable.
But, you know.
Yeah, I don't get it.
No one can beat him whenever they have, like, Comedy Central does the, like, you'll know when Comedy Central has voted for the best comedian in the country, because all the comedians, like, I'm on a lot of the comedians' lists, you know, and they're like, hey, just want to let you know, Comedy Central, could you vote for me? So you go there and you're like, Todd Barry, my favorite comedian, he's number 17 with 7,000 votes. Let's see who's number one. Jeff Dunham, 4.2 million votes.
Like, if he actually separated his dummies, they would still beat Todd Barry. The purple gorilla would beat Todd Barry.
Yeah. Well, you know his dummies?
I think he's got those
dummies,
those dummies voting, I think.
His dummies are voting?
Yeah, I think that's what's going on.
All right, we'll get back to that. But you know what? Let's go to an interview, Todd, you had. Now, we're going to play the interview, and then I heard you have an exciting story to tell us.
You want the story post-interview?
Yeah, let's
That'd
do
be a good tease, post-interview. So, okay. Do you want to set this up any more than
We're going to play a song first, then get into it, right?
Oh, let's play a song. You know, let's play a song by Dave. You bought a song.
Yeah.
Brought a song with you.
Yes. This is by, a Philadelphia band called Shout Magic. They were in Philadelphia. One moved to Portland, whatever. One moved to D.C. Friends of mine, big shout out to Mikey and Steve. Mikey and Steve, they're in the band. This song is called Reagan Dime, and I think it's good.
Excellent.
So we'll hit that, then we'll hit the interview.
Sounds good.
And we'll play another song, and we'll talk to you on the other side.
Wow, give me a long time to go do some stuff. We'll be right back.
This is Todd Marone reporting from Helium Comedy Club in Philadelphia, and I am sitting with Emmy Award-winning comedy phenom, Greg Fitzsimmons. Thanks so much for chatting with us, Greg.
Phenom, that sounds like a he-she or something.
Phenomenal comedian,
oh, nice.
Greg Fitzsimmons. And I think, I would imagine, in the way that I was first introduced to your work and you was through VH1, you're kind of one of the consistent pop culture talking heads on a variety of their shows.
Yeah.
And I can't help but wonder, especially for like the I Love the 80s and the 70s and so on, it has such an eclectic group of people. What is the rap party like?
There's not. I've actually literally, the only time I've seen the other cast members is at other events, like at an audition or at a comedy club. We're never in the same room.
Oh, you're pretty sequestered? And
well, it's one. The interview is just, you know, the crew and you talking to the camera. And then VH1 never spends a dime on a rap party or a gift. They are very new corporate style. You know, just shit money, lots of exposure, and no real emotional ties about anything. Yeah.
And obviously also a renowned stand-up comedian crisscrossing the country here. If you could choose another act to double bill with, whether it be music, comedy, sword swallowing, what would it be?
Oh, that's a good question. I guess like an acoustic singer-songwriter, somebody who's a little bit dark but funny, you know, but not a comedian, like a singer, like somebody like... you know, Billy Bragg style or Amy Mann or somebody who moves people and makes people feel like they're in a place that's, I don't know, that's challenging things, but that at the same time is about, it's not about destruction and negativity.
Yeah, is that what you listen to in your private time?
Yeah, singer-songwriters. I still listen to Dylan a lot, and I like to listen to... it's like I'm not like into folk, but I like chick rock a lot. Like I really like you know, Ricky Lee Jones or Ani DiFranco, or I'll listen to, I had my lesbian friends coming over and I put my like 10, I have a 10 CD player and I put in all lesbian music and I haven't taken it out. It's like Sinead O'Connor, what's their names? Who are the big lesbians? The sisters. Are they sisters?
Well,
Indigo Girls?
Indigo Girls, okay.
Yeah, I like lesbian music. And I dress like a lesbian. I mean, I have a vest.
A butch lesbian, for sure, yeah.
Yeah, I'm definitely a passive top.
Speaking of, you know, like, two of the big names coming through Helium, through Philadelphia here, following you, are Danny Bonaducci and Joe Rogan. So how does it feel to be kind of the calm before the testosterone storm?
I don't think there's any real flow or logic to the weeks at a comedy club. You know, I think it doesn't even matter who's on ahead of you, really. I mean, like the thing about who would be on a bill with me, I don't even think that matters. Like, I would like to hang out and watch those shows, but to me, I feel like I came up in Boston and New York where you'd have 15 guys on a show, and, you know, you just have to learn to go out and... you know, make it your time when you're on stage and do what you do and not worry too much about any other context to it than that.
Yeah. And your show, and interviewing on the tail end of the show, which we really enjoyed, what we loved about it was it seemed like there was so much of it was extemporaneous and was organic and was happening out there. I mean, is that by design, or is that by to keep yourself sane that you're not saying the same thing over and over again every evening?
I talked about on stage, I have ADHD and I really can't link two thoughts together. And so my style was never anything I planned. It's just been, I've been doing it for 19 years, and I've tried very hard to write sets and to stick to, you know, having transitions and all that. But I find that now I just go on stage, and it's not even a rule as much as a reality, is I never know what I'm going to say when I walk up to the microphone. And I feel like when I start that way, then I'll usually just say something that I'm thinking and experiencing, and it connects everything after it, almost like it just puts you in gear. And so when I'm talking, I might be doing a bit about something, but then if something comes up like that, I forget, you know, it was like three or four times tonight where somebody, I kind of yelled something out, and then I just would do a joke that, or sometimes it's not a joke, sometimes it's even a thought I've had, and I'll try to connect to what that person said, because that feels more real than you know, trying to get back to the bit.
Yeah.
It's almost like in a conversation. If you're talking to somebody and another person walks in, and you know, if they introduce.
Well, so I can tell you, though, as an audience member and a big fan of stand-up comedy, it's that much more special. I mean, it justifies coming out to see a show. Because even if I respect the material of a comedian, when you go and you hear the same jokes that you saw on Comedy Central, you hear on the CD, you almost can barely justify getting in the car and spending the money to see the person live and spending the $15 for parking.
Yeah, it's interesting because I think comics before TV... You know, when you think about the Borscht Belt comics and the guys that toured the country, you know, Henny Youngman and Alan King, and, you know, even later, those guys weren't really seen on TV. And so they, if you think about it, you know, this room's got 250 people. So what, 1,500 people, 1,000 to 1,500 people see me this week, and then I'll come back in a year. So it's like you're never burning out the material back then. You could just keep doing it. But now... You know, you have guys like Louis C.K. that's trying to put out a new hour every year, and, you know, Carlin did that. And it's, you know, it puts a lot more impetus on, you know, creating, and which is good because I think stand-up is like, you know, it's like you're always shedding layers and trying to get deeper into whatever you're trying to do, and writing the material is the only way to get there. And I started out in Boston with some of the guys I to this day think are the best comedians I've ever seen, you know, Don Gavin and Kenny Rogerson, Steve Sweeney. But you know, a lot of these guys didn't change their acts, and they could have been so much better, you know, because you can't really change and grow if you've got the bit figured out and you just, you know.
Yeah.
So, but at the same time, I feel like sometimes guys, like Chris Rock, you know, is always doing new material. But to the point where, I don't know, sometimes I feel like they can overexpose themselves by doing that, having a new hour every year, year and a half. And there's an argument that it takes a certain amount of life. It's almost like like a juicer. You got to feed a certain amount of in to get something good. And I think if you're just writing... to write, it starts to feel thin after.
The well has to fill back up.
It depends on the person. I mean, for some people, so much of Carlin's stuff was political, and it was coming in, and it was hitting something for him that he wanted to talk about. So it always felt like he was behind it. But when I see a guy go out and do a new hour that's observational comedy, I just, you know, like a guy like Brian Regan, like he doesn't burn out his material, but it's really crafted tight, and it's not risque. It's not like even compelling. I mean, he's not challenging anything with his stand-up, but it's so good. But I wouldn't want to see him do a new hour every year. I don't think it would be that good, you know?
Gotcha, yeah. You've been connected with the Howard Stern Show for a long while now. Let's say Howard Stern calls a meeting. And he's ready to step down, and he wants to hand the dynasty over to you. You're the heir to satellite comedy radio. Would you take it? Would you take the station? And how would it differ?
Well, I mean, that's something I get a lot of emails about. Every day I get emails from people asking me that and talking about that. And it's really funny because people don't really understand show business. Like, it doesn't work. It just doesn't work like that.
Howard Stern is not the one who would make the decision.
It's not a job like president that you fill. It's a collection of listeners that are fans of a person. And if somebody comes into that time slot or that studio, it's irrelevant. I mean, when he's got off terrestrial, every person that replaced him has since gone off the air. It's not a job.
Mm-hmm.
It's like playing Batman in the next Batman movie. You know, it doesn't mean you're going to make a good movie. You just get the fucking costume now.
Mm-hmm.
So for me, it's like I know how many auditions I go on. I know how many times I've had deals and shows that looked locked. Like, this is it. This one's happening. And 99% of the time, it doesn't work out. And the stuff that does happen that ends up working out and being great comes out of left field at the last second. So... I mean, I'm flattered to think that people would think I'm on the short list for something like that. But the truth is, there's no short list or any list. And what I'm doing now by doing my Monday night show is trying to develop, an audience and an understanding of how to do radio, and hopefully turn it into a local show and grow it from there. But if I do, it's going to be all mine. And if Howard were to If I were to still be doing Howard while I did my own show, it would obviously be the best thing in the world because he can help you a lot. Sure. But there's no replacing him.
Yeah. Well, this turned out just fine, at least this interview. So it was pending. You spoke about it on stage, and here we are. So I appreciate...
I know. This really worked out well. Photos taken by your wife.
Yes. This is definitely the first time that in the midst of a performance, the interview was teased.
Did you record it?
No, I was. I feel fine.
You fucking idiot, you piece of shit.
I'm of like the old 1978 rerun Allman Brothers mindset where you don't record live act, you know.
Yeah,
But we appreciate the time after the show or between shows.
I can't wait to see the link to your what is it, a website?
Yeah, it'll be downloadable, so I'll get it to you as soon as yep. You've made it, like I said.
Well, no, it is. I'm very happy to do it because I think it's good when people try to track music and comedy and art because they are in the same vein. I think one group of fans or audience members is going to benefit from if you have a certain taste. I think hopefully it'll cross over and we'll get some people to come to this basement in Philly.
Yep, that's the idea. Well, again, thanks. Thanks for the time, and I appreciate it, and
right.
I hope you have a phenomenal stay here.
All right, thank
Philadelphia,
you.
PA.
All right, thanks very much. We're shaking hands.
Well, all the bastards on parade, every night horse serenade. All the circles in your back that'll never fade to black. What's the word? Haven't you heard? With all your plastic pedigrees, dirty white coat policies, the corruption in his hands, and the devil understands. Say the word. If that's what you heard. Well, no one ever told you how to breathe. Can you believe? In some reprieve. So when you finally get to sleep, just a great place in the deep, another pattern for your skein, and they can never find your vein. Hold on tight, we're here all night. Well, no one ever told you what to say. What's in a look? What's in a day? Will all the specters saddle by the door? I'll take you back. Sing through the floor. I'll take you back. Well, 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 I'll take you back.
Okay, that song was Dirty White Coats by The Flying Change. And if they sound familiar, that's because that is our friends who we reviewed on the site before, the band Lipstick, and they have since changed their name to The Flying Change. Whole album is fantastic.
That was a very good song, Russ.
Yeah.
Really liked it.
It's good, right? They changed the name, and they've got a fantastic new album out that's called Pain is a Reliable Signal.
It's fantastic.
Very worth checking out.
Excellent. And now, we just listened to a fabulous interview with Greg Fitzsimmons. Todd, what was your overall feel with Funny Man Greg? Is he a funny, fun guy, would you say?
Well, the show was brilliant.
Yeah.
And you heard me say it during the interview, but just seeing lots of comedy shows, you really appreciate the fact that it's organic and that he's reacting to the crowd and you know you're watching a one-of-a-kind show.
Yeah, yeah.
I really appreciate that because otherwise, why not just buy, like I said during the interview, why not just buy the album and listen to the shtick that you have? So his show was very unique and it seemed very tailored to the audience that he was dealing with.
So he did crowd work, but he wasn't on script.
No, okay, yeah. Right. I mean, he obviously had some jokes, but he went with the flow. He seemed angrier on stage than I imagined him to be. And even maybe a little, and I don't want to say angry during the interview, but fairly serious during the interview. And I kind of appreciated that also because he kind of gave us an insight as to what it's like to be a comedian, you know? So it was kind of insider comedian information as opposed to like just going on there and doing jokes, which other comedians have done, and that's fine too. But anyway, I appreciated that as well. But the most bizarre kind of surreal moment of the night was, I believe it was a Saturday night, and it was a packed house. It showed sold out show at 8 o'clock.
Where?
And Helium, at Helium.
Sure.
And he's maybe 8 to 10 minutes into his set.
This is great.
And his.
Did you hear this story?
Of course.
What?
He wrestled it out.
I told you to save it. You're like a little child.
I had Todd in a headlock. All right, it was a leg lock.
We walked 2 steps out of your house, and he's like, "You had to tell me what happened." What happened?
Oh,
I can't believe you tipped the hand like that.
I didn't know Russ was listening.
I don't like you guys conspiring.
I wasn't. I had him in a figure four leg lock.
Now that we're in Russ's driveway, yeah. So,
all right, tell the story to Dave.
Two little girls.
Yeah, I haven't heard.
Two little girls giggling in your driveway.
Dave and I will react to this appropriately.
I passed him a note. So anyway. About 8 to 10 minutes into the act, his iPhone goes off.
What?
And he digs into his pocket, and he'd already established that he had a fairly short attention span, like he had ADHD. So he goes into his pocket, and he picks out his iPhone, and he looks, and he says, "Oh, I got an interview coming up with Tom Marone. Tom, are you in the..." He's in the middle of his act, you know? Just 250 people facing him, loving it, and he puts the brakes on. He's like, "Tom Marone, Tom with Used Wigs Radio." It was just bizarre. And of course, I was like, "Yeah, I'm Tom Marone." It's actually Tom Marone. He's like, "What's it with you?" I was like, "Used Wigs Radio, you know?" And of course, like, "What's that?" But it was bizarre. It was very surreal to be... And I wasn't sitting anywhere near the stage.
Was the interaction funny?
I wouldn't call it funny or unfunny. It was just like very kind of matter of fact. Like,
you know what would be great? And if the whole audience just turned and you went, "Boo!"
The whole audience certainly did turn. But, you know, can you imagine like being at a musical performance?
Yeah.
Or even just... It just felt like being at a movie. And you're like, you're enjoying the movie. And then all of a sudden, like, they slam the brakes on. Like, "Russ, are you enjoying this movie? I'll be chatting with you later." You know, it's just so bizarre and surreal. Like, I was torn between, like, standing up and, like, waving my arms, like, triumphantly and, like, crawling under the table. I didn't know what to do. But there it was. So
did you
was,
text them or what? It just, like,
no,
a
no,
calendar
I did
alert.
He
let it be known. Todd wasn't bothering him during it.
Yeah.
"Hey, look, I'm right here."
By the way, yeah, I'm in the crowd right now. I'll talk to you later.
It's me waving. No,
pay attention to me.
He put in his calendar, I guess.
Yeah,
so
yeah.
So he had an alarm that was set to go off that he had to do his eye count on his iPhone.
He didn't know how long the show was going to go. He's like, "Why am I still here?"
So that was a very surreal moment for me to be enjoying a show and then suddenly thrust into it and then just kind of chewed up and just spit back out and the show went on, you know?
So he must have been pretty relaxed. He just starts talking.
Yeah,
know?
Then how
but it,
just,
it was like, a great yeah, show, and I would strongly recommend that if anyone even if you don't know who he is, if he comes to your town
or back
to Philadelphia and you're a Philadelphia folk, check him out. It was a great show.
Speaking of interviews, you do a lot of interviews, and it's a lot of you get excited for them. Some are daunting. Some, you get what you expect. Some you don't. You also do a lot of interviews.
Uh-huh.
And I think it's always, and I found it interesting, you just did a great interview with Kevin Allison from the State. And the thing I liked about it, and I think you probably enjoyed it too, is you probably had to say 10 words.
Yeah,
he
just went off. Yeah.
Kevin Allison's a very funny guy, and he's one of those guys that, like a lot of us who grew up loving the State and stuff like that, you want to ask him kind of like, I know what you're doing now, and it is interesting. He does a lot of like improv workshops and comedy mm-hmm. workshops. But like anyone who's famous for something, you want to kind of get to that. And I liked how you kind of subtly went right. into that. And he was so great about talking about the... you got to listen to the interview if you go to comicversusaudience.com uh-huh. and listen to the interview about like the machinations of everything that went on behind the scenes of like the state were famous, they skyrocketed, they got a CBS special, what went wrong, blah, 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 like stuff you really want to hear about. Huh. But you don't want to bother a guy like asking right. what went on 18 years ago, yeah. Yeah. even though it's still interesting to you.
Yeah, that's what I was worried about.
But I think
about,
most entertainers seem like they're at peace with it.
Some guys aren't, you know.
Well, like, yeah. like Johnny Buffett, Jimmy Buffett, whatever you call him, isn't going to deny the audience Margaritaville, you know what I mean?
Freddie Murphy.
Freddie Murphy. These guys are in a band together.
There's going to be a really great tour. Freddie Murphy, Johnny Buffett.
Who are some people that you know of in Tim the entertainment Morello. Industry that resent a giant splash that they've made in the past?
Well, did anyone just the Billy Bob Thornton thing that just came out with his interview? Like, no. He's friggin' insane, Billy Bob Thornton.
Yeah.
He's a nut job. Where he went on this tour with his new band, like the Box Cutters, and they suck. You know, they play, they're horrible, yeah. like, we're alt-country, honky-tonk. No, you just suck, and you're a hillbilly thinks because you're a hillbilly you can have a couple...
What was he trying to distance himself from?
Acting, his whole career. Not, so he said to everyone who interviewed him, he said, you can't ask me about acting. And they had this real polite, like, interview guy, you know, like an NPR type, like, hey, Billy, just wanted to ask you, your music's really great, we all love it. Just want to check in with you, like, how do you contrast, you know, your music work with your acting career? I don't talk about that. I don't know what your next question, please. No, but I'm just saying it's kind of important for context. I think we're, would you ask Tom Petty this same question? And the guy's like, well...
Is this really how it went down?
Really, honestly, yeah, you can go listen to the interview, and it was insane where he would not, like, he's in the mindset that I am now Billy Bob Thornton, world's greatest musician.
But he's an idiot if he thinks that anybody is interested in him because of
right.
because he's
yeah.
not an actor.
Or, yeah, like, did he start? Yeah, he should career. Change his name when he did the band.
Yes, yeah.
The only reason why he's being up. Interviewed in the first place is because he is an actor.
Go, like, if you're Greg Brady, become Johnny Bravo, so you can go out there and be someone different, right? No,
become Sorry. Chris Gaines.
Yes, Chris Gaines. Yeah. I understand that reference.
Anybody right? else?
That was a hillbilly country music star that grew out
as a little goatee. I forgot the
other guy's name. Garth Brooks. Doesn't get to be called hillbilly.
No, he doesn't.
He's like a polished apartment country guy.
Like a hillbilly country western guy would be a step up.
No, you know what? You know what Garth Brooks is? Garth Brooks is a super intelligent guy who really knew how to take advantage of the new country music sound early on and be like, you know what?
Country.
I'm not gonna really pretend I'm country. I'm going to make it seem that way, but I'm going to take pop country and become the single greatest recording artist of all time, which he is.
So speaking of, this is how I'm going to tie this back to comedy. This is
I'm not a fan,
you,
but he's a brilliant guy.
Because it's brilliant. All right.
Okay, what? Well, here we go, Russ.
This is how I'm going to tie that back to comedy. Woo! So this past weekend, I'm in Arizona. We're with friends of my wife's, and they actually really like new country, what I call pop country. So
sure.
They put it on in the car while we were driving on the way back, and that's fine. I was driving. I said, sure, whatever you want to put on. And it was crazy. They were doing like the top 25 countdown for the week.
Yeah.
And I listen to all styles of music.
Yeah, let it be known, Russ, you have the most open mind musically that... Mine is a steel trap that you can't open with the jaws of
right.
life.
It's
Yours
funny.
Is like... Mama Duger, who's always shooting out
of the three of us,
wide,
he's the only one that actually could be a snob about it because
yes.
he understands it inside and out, can play multiple instruments and performs, and he is by no means a music snob.
So we preface that. Russ, go.
So I listen to and like everything, and I like all styles, right? And classic country, love it. The country as a style. Every single song that came on, I was sitting there, and I said to my wife later, I was like, I really... It was such an interesting experience for me because normally I would have just turned it off. To sit there and get barraged with 5-6 songs like that, I was shocked at how I couldn't find anything redeemable about it. The lyrics were trite and stupid and so calculating. But anyway, the point was, as bad as the music
You're
was...
You're losing some friends.
And pop country is just terrible. I can't find anything redeeming about it. As bad as the music was, the guy who was doing the top 25 countdown... Jeff Foxworthy,
oh.
who is so unfunny that I was sitting there saying, if I was stuck in the middle of the country and these were the only stations I could dial in and this was all I had in terms of music and comedy, I don't think I'd get up in the morning. Because he is so freaking stupid and not funny. And then he calls Larry the Cable Guy. I'm sure people are going, oh my God, he's calling Larry the Cable Guy. And they're getting back together and doing a bit on the countdown.
If they could only get Bill Engvall, this would be awesome.
I mean,
but you know what? Oh. These guys, Jeff Foxworthy and
Jack's Foxworthy.
Jack Foxworthy and Reggie the Cable Guy. Reggie the Cable Guy was a normal stand-up comedian.
Band something, right?
Yeah, who was college educated, normal stand-up comedian.
From Florida, which is in the South.
Right, and he part of his stand-up act, he would do a little character every now and then. So he did this Larry the Cable Guy character, 5% of his bit. And then he noticed that got the biggest laughs. So next time he went out, 20% Next thing you know, cuts off the sleeves, and now he makes $2 million in performance.
Sleeves is what
and
did
thing
it.
Is, too, each one of those guys has their catchphrase that they have to say. So after Larry the Cable Guy comes on and does his bit, and they were talking about taxes and how I got to pay for my grandmother and she doesn't know what to fill out. Of course, after he does the whole thing, as a complete non sequitur, okay, I'll see you guys next time. Get her done.
Yeah, it's not even a joke.
It's no, not. It's I was like, what is it? It might as well be like, see you next time. Papa, AAMCO.
Now, did you have to duck with the high fiving of your friends from the front seat to the back seat after that line of like, get her done, automatic. Woo!
No, everybody was kind of like quiet because it was like 5:30 in the morning, and I was just kind of driving silently, like looking out of the corner of my eyes, like, is this Scar?
This
else?
Is Arizona, also not the South.
No,
yeah. South
doesn't
is
matter.
Spreading, man.
It's like unmusic broken up by uncomedy.
Yeah, it really was shocking.
If you go, I mean, this is the reason I don't travel. I will not go west. I honestly won't go west of Hershey, Pennsylvania. I won't go south of Wilmington, Delaware. And I'll go north as far up to Nova Scotia.
After Wilmington, yeah.
Yeah, and like because I'm afraid of America. I really am. I'm afraid of America. Dave, where were you raised?
I was raised in Erie, Pennsylvania, which is west of Hershey.
Yeah.
Almost Midwest.
To defend these places, though.
Don't.
Oh,
you can't.
Hear me out. Right. There are pockets of people.
Yeah, I'm kidding. Of course there are.
There are pockets of people who have good taste.
Of course.
And when you get into a pocket like that, they are so kind of ferocious about their about how strong they feel about what's right. It's actually almost worth it to seek that out. Like in other words, Athens, Georgia, it's almost like the kind of safe spot in Manhunt. You know, like everyone who has any kind of taste from everywhere around runs there.
It's
screaming
like,
and blazing. And and they're thrilled to be there and they're passionate. Whereas if you live in New York or Philadelphia, you're not as passionate about good taste because you're surrounded in a sea of fairly.
And, don't get me wrong, like classic country I love, and Southern Rock, like you name the band, man. Even ones that some people think are funny, like, you know, Black Oak Arkansas and Blackfoot and, you know, like
Molly Hatchet.
Wet Willie, Molly Hatchet. Like, I love that stuff. There's just nothing redeeming about that music and that whole, you know.
Yeah. Well, that genre, I would agree. I'm just saying, as far as geographically speaking, there are pockets of people
And can I just tell you, I mean, when I came to Philadelphia, I'd say the Philadelphia friends I met had the worst taste in music. And, like, I was so depressed when I came to college here. And I'm just like, you guys don't listen to any of that? None? You've never heard of it. And, you know, I was a music snob, but I'm like, nothing. And it was my friends from college. I mean, like, it's Johnny Buffett. It's it's that type of music.
Well,
you know?
we had
it's beach music, you know, and nothing else.
Our,
like,
our next door neighbor at college, he had one CD. It was Candlebox. And he literally and he played it.
I remember that.
The first Candlebox album. Yeah. And he played it literally just back to back. Just had the CD on repeat, and it would go for 6-7 hours at a time.
A person must not like music.
Yeah. You don't like music if you have one.
That's all you have.
What you almost fault somebody like that who lives in Philadelphia, where bands that are good come,
right,
and they like crap. You know, you almost have you have more animosity.
Shall we play some good music?
Yeah, let's play. Let's play.
Here's an example. Next show we'll be featuring an interview that I just conducted just a couple moons ago with the artist behind Beirut. That's Zach. Yeah. And And he's a ukulele player, by the way. A very exotic array of instruments he plays, but ukulele predominantly, not guitar. And one of the reasons was he smashed his wrist and couldn't get his hand around the neck of a guitar.
Oh, wow.
So played a smaller ukulele, but it just adds to the exotic sound of his music. But anywho, Dent May and his magnificent ukulele is... This is a fella and an album that's getting some press and some attention in the indie alt world. And this is him with Meet Me in the Garden from the Day Trotter session.
It's a fella? A fella that does a lot of hollering?
It's a little fella. Dent May and his magnificent ukulele.
Good stuff, Todd. Well, you like crazy stuff, don't you? You really do.
What did you think of that, Jeff?
It was ukulele-ish, I'll tell you that. If I had to like really pick a song that was very ukulele-centric, I would pick that one. That was called a non-committal response.
This is my projection for that song.
Okay.
And this would kind of... It would be in a category of maybe 3 or 4 existing songs from the podcast.
Yes.
You hate it the first time you hear it, or you don't like it at least.
Right, right, right.
And you hear it a couple times, and it sticks to your ribs.
You played a couple that right away I was like, this blows.
This will get up in your musical crawl,
right,
I think.
Right.
And start then, a family.
Yeah.
Time for shouts.
Hip, hip, hooray! Hooray!
So I have Twitter fever.
Oh, you do?
And
You do. You've been Twittering a lot more.
I do. And you know what did it for me? Was going on vacation and having that kind of connect. Just feeling like I had to archive it for myself. And
sure, sure.
I think it's probably... Twittering is probably a lot more about yourself than it is about anybody
else. It is the most...
It's very self-indulgent.
That's the word. It's self-indulgent.
But anyway, so I have Twitter fever. So I ran into a robot on Twitter.
A brobot?
A robot called Dear Robot.
All right.
And somehow this robot recognizes all Twitters that go to the Twitterverse that start with Dear.
Okay.
And it retweets them. So I wouldn't recommend following it because it's like 1,000 an hour. But go to Dear Robot every once in a blue moon and sift through, and they're all ones that start with Dear, and they range from like Dear and then at and like their wife's name, I love you so much, blah blah blah, blah, to, you know, Dear tax season, I despise you, or Dear inanimate object, you know, Dear car, thanks for making up that snowy hill. And it's like all these people just kind of writing open letters to real people, to inanimate objects, to seasons, to shows, to governments. And there's such a diverse range, but they're all very charming that they're like writing these open letters to Dear Thing. So Dear Robot. Again, don't subscribe because you'll be flooded. But
I'd be amazed if I spent an hour there.
I think you'd like it. It's kind of like Post Secret. Have you ever found? You know, you're kind of looking over the shoulder of these letters that people are writing to whatever it is that they're talking to.
Yeah.
Dear Robot.
Yes. I hinted earlier that I've been digging current TV, and they have a lot of funny shows. The Super News, you got to check out Super News. Very funny. If you go to Hipsters in Space and the Craigslist Genie, they're two little. They do very funny animated shorts. So check them out. Hipsters in Space, Craigslist Genie. You can type them into either YouTube or CurrentTV.com or Current.com. Don't even know what it's called. And Dave. Let's shout out some things. Yeah, I think you'd like to shout out.
So this is just stuff I like?
Well, no, you could shout out maybe a show that's coming up that might involve you or maybe some people you know.
Yeah, I guess my show, which is again on May 4th, Shubin Theater, 407 Bainbridge Street,
it's
8
great.
O'clock.
Right off of South Street, a lot of places that have dinner. You know, if you want to go to Horizons Vegetarian Cafe right around there.
The and it's BYOB.
Yeah, you can bring,
bring your fancy beers. Yeah. Monday.
Cool. So we can bring our fancy beers in a cooler or in a brown bag. What would you?
I think brown bag, but I guess you could bring a big cooler. Excellent. I don't know.
Yeah,
it's cramped, but yeah.
Yeah, it's a fun place. It's a good place to see comedy and awesome.
Definitely.
Thank you for coming, Dave.
Thanks for having me.
We hope to continue the mirth on Use Wigs Radio for another podcast. Hopefully next time we'll all get together. What do you think for podcast 62? You guys up for it?
Huh?
Well, the reason I bring this up, our contract ran out with the corporation that runs us.
Well, now it's the Russians.
I know it's the Russians.
We haven't heard from them.
But they're really considering the switching us all to that MP3 site where they just sell MP3s and we have to promote them.
You could do this yourselves though in your house.
What? No, we need a corporate overlord. No, you need. We're a small
DIY cog in, man.
No DIY Fugazi and Mackay crap. We are a small cog in a big wheel. We are part of a Russian conglomerate that controls us, and we're fine with that.
The Cometariat.
That's it for Podcast 61. Thank you. Bye.
Can you hold this for 1 sec?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I should probably get some food, right?
Yeah.
What's good?
Chicken fingers are pretty good. We have panini sandwiches. They're good.
You must try the chicken fingers.
Are they good?
No, I don't know.
I know. You're like, you know what I mean? It's not the best food.
Yeah. Soup? Do you have...
You have personal pan pizzas, like little pizzas.
I fucking love your accent. maybe I'll have a personal pan pizza, just because of the way you said it.